given by the state law advisor. this should be confirmed, you know, that the understanding we thought we had received. Matthew van der Merwe is going to deal with that issue today with a proposal, with a tiny proposal, because the issue raised about clarity has to be kept in mind, all right? Then when it comes to the other aspect, you will recall right at the end, the last clause of the last five clauses, where the issue of compliance with other pieces of legislation. You recall that one right at the end? Now, we were of the opinion when on that last day, of course, when everyone was intent on getting to their constituencies, that, you know, it was in fact covered. Now, I just want to alert you to that one. It's right here towards the end when it refers to let me just see here, functions or something, let me just get it now, 26 or something, I think, right at the end when things are coming in. I'm just not looking, so this was ill and then that means I've lost my head. You know, just one moment while I just get it. But it's towards the end to do with customs, etc., and the shipment. You remember that one, Honourable Sagemi?
No, Chair President, this is not toward the end. It's on page 11,
okay.
On the issue of the designations of the special economic zones,
right.
Where SARS raised the issues around the transshipment.
The 24, that clause 24.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, this was raised by ourselves as well, that did this cover. When it says subject to customs and import, you know, was it covered by leaving XM? There was a difference of opinion between the two advocates. By that I mean the state law advisor, and I mean parliamentary. Now, I would like certainly to ask members to allow us to look at those areas where there were the two question marks, you know, the entities come zoned and then that particular issue was up. And to be quite clear before we move further. Right. So on that note, I'd ask, and yes, we do have someone who has been able to join us. I just can't see right at the back there with my... we must thank you very much for securing, you know, I'm sure the Honourable Member was already going to go elsewhere, but I must appeal to you, Honourable Ngali, you know, comrade, I mean, you know, I've worked with you for so long now, I don't know where to call you, Comrade Joyce or Ngali, or what,
Honourable,
that, would you stay with us for half an hour?
Okay.
Thank you. Right, over to yourself, Shani, Advocate Nanda Merwe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. The issue that I would like to take you through is in a set of two terms used in the bill, the phrases special economic zone and the phrase special economic zone entity. Now this speaks to the role players, and you'll recall that actually right from the start the clear lines between role players have been a concern, and we tried with every draft that we've sort of looked at, all the amendments that we've looked at, we've tried to make those lines more and more clear. But we think that there is more to be done still. And the whole issue comes in around these two terms, the board and those that we feel have been quite clearly classified, but these two, there are still some mixed lines. So if I can explain to you, first of all, special economic zone, that phrase, we actually defined in clause 1. And on that regard, if members have the B or in front of them, the latest print, you will find that definition on page 4 in line 44. Line 42. Special economic zone, but it is on the slides as well, means an area designated as a special economic zone in terms of section 23 sub 6. That is in clause 1. So what are we talking about here? We are talking about an area, something that you can take a pencil, take a map, and draw a line around. It's a geographical area that you, if you fly a plane, you can look down and say that is the special economic zone. We're talking about something physical that you can see. Special economic zone entity. Now here we can go to clause 25, which is on page 12, and it starts right at line 1, governance and management of the special economic zone. And then clause 25.1a says, upon designation of an area as a special economic zone, the licensee must establish an entity to manage the special economic zone. So what are we talking about here? We are talking about a legal concept. If we look at the rest of clause 25, we'll see that it must be established either as a national government business enterprise or provincial government business enterprise or a municipal entity or a company. So talking about a juridic person, so that's the difference between the two phrases. The one is a geographical area that you can see with your eyes. The other one is a juristic person. It's a legal term. It is an entity that can act and have financial statements and do business and things like that. So if we have those concepts clear, just to put it more in context, the board I've referred to already is the board of directors of the special economic zone entity, the juristic person. And the licensee must appoint that board, and that board then is responsible for efficient and governance and management of the business affairs of the zone. Now that is actually one of the problematic clauses, but I'll get to that now. Just to give you a picture of what we have as far as the lines are concerned, your licensee will establish the SEZ entity and appoint the board. The SEZ entity will manage the geographical area. The SEZ board will manage the, will see the effective governance and management of the business affairs of the geographical area. But you can see that there's not, somewhere we're sort of missing a link. It seems to be missing a link. So if we go to the problem as such, if we have clauses that refer to financial statements, business affairs, reports by, and those refer sometimes to the entity, sometimes to the geographical area. And that's a line that I would recommend to this committee that we need to rectify. So if I can take you through the instances, in a number of clauses, and I won't now list them clause by clause, but in the ones listed on the slide 7, all of these aspects, when they refer to special economic zone, that clause clearly refers to either the geographical area or the tool of special economic zone. So in other words, still the geographical area, but on a more strategic level. So there's no amendments there. But then to give you some examples where we are concerned that might cause confusion. Clause 25.5, which is the first one that I said is problematic, where the board is appointed for the governance and management of the business affairs of the geographical area. It does not gel. It should be the entity. The next clause there is incorrect. The board must manage the special economic zone entity. The next clause, 26.3, again, affairs of the geographical zone. 27, revenue and expenditure of the geographical zone. The next, affairs of the geographical area. On the next slide, clause 28, that one we corrected, and that is actually the one I think that triggered the question, because the financial affairs, we indicated, must be of the entity. It can't be of the geographical area. The same, the next to paragraph D, sub 1, dealing with a report on the activities of the geographical area, which is it's impossible. The financial statements of the geographical area, the annual report on the affairs of the geographical area. And then lastly, the finances or financial misconduct, mismanagement of the geographical area. So those are issues that it just, it's not, I suppose in practice we will find things will run smoothly, but a bill, it needs to be cleaned up. So there are two proposals. The proposal that's from my side, my recommendation, is that in all those clauses, we simply add entity. For instance, there is mismanagement of the finances of that special economic zone, and we add entity. Financial mismanagement of that special economic zone, entity. I can go on and on like that. The state attorney, and unfortunately I don't see him here, indicated that if we look at clause 25(6), and that's the second bullet point on slide 8, where it says the special economic zone board must manage that special economic zone entity, and you then pull that through to the entity manages the zone, then that is sufficient, you know, that's sufficient in the bill to make provision for elimination of that confusion. Members might decide that is indeed the case. I do not agree. I think that the bill should be cleaned up, and there should be, wherever confusion might arise, we should do it now. It's not a lot of amendments, simply adding the word entity into 10 clauses. So that is the aspect of entities. I think I would like to just, on the aspect of the transshipment, my colleague, Advocate Stratham, actually had the discussions with SARS and so on, and I think understands that aspect very well. If I could hand to him to just speak to what the concerns were as he understood them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Allow me to go specifically to the portion in the bill. The Honourable Khadebe has referred to it just a while ago. It's on page 11. It's in line 45. It relates to the definition of what we find there in paragraph A of the free port. And it might be worthwhile, Madam Chair, just very briefly to read this definition so that we get the total context of what we're talking about. This is not a big deal. It is fairly technical, and hopefully it should not present a problem in this honourable committee. Free port, that is the terminology, and there is the definition in line 45, means a duty-free area adjacent to a port of entry where imported goods may be unloaded, and here is the operative part, may be unloaded for value-adding activities within the special economic zone. So clearly, the requirement is that there should be value added to the goods being so imported. And this is where the reservation of SARS is coming in. They are adamant that within the context of customs legislation, the word transshipment does not sit comfortably in this definition. The reason being that according to their legislation, transshipment has a specific technical meaning. That means that a ship or a vessel comes into the port. It is loaded with goods. In the port, nothing more happens than simply the goods being offloaded of that vessel within a short space of time. It might be within the same day or possibly the next day. All the goods being offloaded and unloaded onto another vessel in the same port for purposes of exporting the goods immediately. They are simply saying that based on their meaning, transshipment has got nothing to do with adding value to any of the goods on that vessel, and the word should be omitted from the definition. Allow me in the same breath and vein, Madam Chair, to turn to the same page. This is in line 49. It's another definition. Free trade zone means a duty-free area offering, once again duty-free area, offering storage and distribution facilities, and then we've got the operative part again, for value-adding activities within the special economic zone for subsequent saving transshipment, but here is an additional problem, the word re-export. Once again, the argument is that according to their legislation, re-export has got very specific meaning. That means that a commodity or a good is imported into the country for a specified period and a specified purpose only. If we can make use of a very simple example, if some specialized excavator is needed for excavating a hole where a huge foundation of a building should be erected, then that excavator is imported for a period of 2 months for the specific purpose of doing that excavation. Apart from the maintenance being done in respect of that excavator, there is no value adding taking place to the commodity. It is here for 2 months for a specific purpose. Once the purpose has been fulfilled, it's going to be re-exported. But once again, the word re-export does not fit with the value adding part to the excavator, because essentially the very same excavator that came in is the one that's about to be exported. So the request, Madam Chair, is simply this, that in line 47, the two words, subsequent transshipment, be omitted, and that in line 51, the three words, transshipment or re, be omitted. So that simply read in line 47, for storage, repackaging or processing and the rest, and in line 51, for subsequent export. That is the submission, Madam Chair. I thank you.
Right, I'm going to, if there are any comments, queries, please raise your hands now. Honourable members? Yes, Honourable Khadebi.
Chairperson, I will start with this issue also raised by Advocate Bernard Melbourne, the issue of the SEZ entity and the geographical area. It is true, when we deal with the financial statement, Chair, in the SEZ, you'll find different businesses which are operational there. So when you speak to an area, how are we going to have the financial statement of those businesses combined, whatever. But I think that the intention of this bill was to deal with the financial statements of the entity which is owning the SEZ. I think that one is a reasonable request. There is a reasonable request, Chairperson, that we put an entity so that there must be a thorough clarity on the issue. And then on the second issue of that one, transshipment, I think that in the last meeting, the problem which I'm having is that in most of the meetings I had to leave midway through. But I recall that we had some time back requested the DDG of trade industry and that of treasury to meet and then sort out all these things. So I don't know how far did it go, because I think that this request which is coming from SARS, I think it is reasonable, but they must give us a clear way out on the issue of transit, because we have requested them to interact so that they clean up this thing. But from this request which is coming, I think that it is going to be advisable that even when we pass a bill, we pass a bill whereby all the stakeholders are going to support it. The fact that once we speak about value adding and then importing things, automatically puts us into the picture. So if there's anything which is going to affect them adversely, I think that we must minimize that as far as possible. I from where I'm seated, I don't see a problem in eliminating those terms, just like transshipment or re-export, whatever. But I think that they must also come to the table and tell us. Does the DGI have any problem around that?
Yeah, DDG?
No, Chair, we don't have a problem. We have been working also with SARS, and we agree with them, and it's a technical amendment, and it doesn't change the subject. It just clarifies and makes it compliant also with the SARS legislation. So we are comfortable with it, Chair. Thanks, Chair.
So that deals with that aspect, Honourable Khadebi. Honourable James?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the second aspect, I don't think it's at all problematic what has been proposed in terms of the omission of subsequent transshipment in both clauses.
Right.
No,
as I say, what has been of value to us in terms of processes, this was raised at our last meeting, and you will recall it was backwards and forwards.
And I'm glad we now have a final position after the effective consultations within the departments, as it were. So that's very healthy, as you say, Honourable Hadebe. So we move forward in that manner. With having got that clarity, what we are going to do now is to, we have from the advocate Van der Merwe got the relevant clauses that are directly affected by this. Do you follow? And we will address those first. Of course, what I'll do is I need that myself as well, but it's fine then. You see, we have one copy. Yeah. I think, you see, I need a copy of that as well. So, could we just adjourn for 2 minutes, please, while that copy is being made?
all I'm saying is apparently you knew about the meeting if you're passing the bill today.
Members, we start with the motion of desirability before we go clause by clause on the challenges. That in the Special Economic Zones Bill B3-2013, that in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to provide for the designation, promotion, development, operation and management of special economic zones, to provide for the establishment, appointment of members and functioning of the Special Economic Zones Advisory Board, to empower Minister to establish the Special Economic Zones Funds, to regulate the application, issuing, suspension, withdrawal and transfer of Special Economic Zones Operator Permits, to provide for functions of the Special Economic Zones Operator, to provide for transitional arrangements and to provide for matters connected thereof, therewith. Now, can we first of all have a mover on the desirability? Thank you, Honourable James, seconded by Honourable Kadiri. Seconded by Honourable Kabasa. Clause 7. Proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable James. Clause 8, proposed by Honourable Kobaza, seconded by Honourable Hill-Lewis. Clause 9, proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable James. Clause 10. Clause 11, proposed by Honourable James, seconded by Honourable Kobaza. Clause 12, proposed by Honourable Kobaza, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. Clause 13, proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable James. Clause 14, proposed by Honourable Waihili, seconded by Honourable Hill-Lewis. Clause 15, proposed by Honourable Kobaza, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. Clause 16, proposed by Honourable James, seconded by Honourable Waihili. Clause 17, proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable Kobaza. Clause 18, proposed by Honourable Hill-Lewis, seconded by Honourable Kobaza. Clause 19, proposed by Honourable Kobaza, seconded by Honourable Waihili. Clause 19, proposed by Honourable James, seconded by Honourable Hill-Lewis. Clause 20, proposed by Honourable Hill-Lewis, seconded by Honourable Wu. 1, 2, 3, Hadebe. Clause 20, proposed by 21, I. Well, now I see you are following. Honourable Kobaza proposed, seconded by Honourable James. Clause 22, proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable Waihili. Clause 23, proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable James. Clause 24, Honourable, I recognise you, Honourable Hadebe.
Honourable Chairperson, on clause 24, subsection 5A, I propose that we delete the term subsequent transshipment.
So, in short, you want it to read, Freeport means a duty-free port area adjacent to a port of entry where imported goods may be offloaded, unloaded for value-adding activities within the special economic zone for storage, repackaging, or processing, subject to customs import procedures.
Well, Mr. Chairperson.
Can we have are you proposed the amendment? Who seconds it? Honourable Hill-Lewis, am I correct? Seconds it? We move. Yes. Honourable Hadebe?
Chairperson, I move again that section clause 24, subsection 5B, will remove the terms, delete the term transshipment or rate, so that the final text must read, the free trade zone means a duty-free area offering storage and distribution facilities for value-adding activities within the special economic zones for subsequent export.
That who seconds it, Honourable James. Right. So, we are then able to move to clause 25, proposed by clause 25, Waihili, yes, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. 25.
Sir, on clause 25, subsection 5, I propose that after the special economic zone, there must be an entity included.
I'm looking at members. Right.
So proposed by Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable Hill-Lewis. Right. We move to the next. And that is clause 26. Honourable Hadebe?
On clause 26, Chairperson, I propose that... 26, subsection 3, after a special economic zone, we include entity, so that that clause will read, the special economic zone board must provide the minister with such information and documentation as the minister may reasonably require in connection with the affairs of the special economic zone entity.
Okay,
was 27. Hang on, I'm not 25, 26, right, 3. Right. 27. Hang on, we need. Yes, right. You see how the rhythm has lost now. Yes. Proposed by yourself, that amendment. Seconded the amendment by Honourable Pulasa. Right. Now, 27. Clause 27. Honourable Hajebi.
Chairperson, on clause 27, A, I propose that after the special economic zone, we must put the term entity so that that A must read as follows. Containing a projection of the value and expenditure of that special economic zone entity in respect of the ensuing financial year.
Thank you. And seconded by, wait, seconded by Honourable Hill Lewis. Yes, Honourable Khadebi.
On B, Chair, I still propose also that put entity at a special economic zone so that it reads as follows, covering the affairs of that special economic zone entity for each of the two immediately following financial years.
Thank you. So we have a proposed proposed for that amendment seconded by Honourable Waihili. Right. Now we have Clause 28. Clause 28. Honourable Khadebi.
So on Clause 28, 1D, I propose that after special economic zone we put an entity so that annual report, so that you can read like that, an annual report on the activities of the special economic zone entity during that financial year.
And that's the proposal there, Honourable Khadebi, seconded by Honourable Hill Lewis.
Again, on the same toss, 2 now. Roman 2, audited financial statement of the special economic zone entity.
The proposal there, for that amendment, seconded by Honourable Hill Lewis. Now we come to clause 28 again, 2A.
Yeah, on the clause 28, 2A, Chair, after special economic zone, we also still put entity so that it can clearly present the state of affairs of that special economic zone entity.
We have a proposal for that amendment seconded by Honourable James. Right. 29, clause 29. Honourable Debbie.
Clause 29, 1C. Clause 29, 1C. There is mismanagement of finances of the special economic zone entity. A term entity, again.
Thank you. A proposal for that amendment, a seconder, Honourable Waihili. Right. Then we have clause 29 again, Honourable Khadebi.
Yeah, 29.3.
Yes.
So the minister must act in terms of substitution without consulting the advisory board, the special economic zone board, and if there's any financial management of that special economic zone entity, and put entity after that special economic zone.
I want to confirm you are talking about line 37.
And then the following one again, the same line, and the delay caused by cost will be detrimental to the function of that special economic.
So that's line 38.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I hope members understand there's double amendment there on the same issue.
Yeah.
Right. We have that proposed. Can we have a seconded, please? Honourable James seconds it. Right. Now, that deals with one issue that's come up already, the word concept of entity. We then move, Honourable Members, to Clause 30, proposed by Honourable Kabasa, seconded by Honourable James Gotu. Clause 31, proposed by Honourable Waihili, seconded by Honourable Khadebi. Clause 32, proposed by Honourable Khadebi, seconded by Honourable James. Clause 33, proposed by Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Clause 34, proposed by Honourable Waihili, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Right. on clause 35, proposed by Honourable Davey, seconded by Honourable Hill Lewis. Clause 36, proposed by Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Corbassa. Clause 37, proposed by Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Waili. Clause 37, proposed by Honourable James, seconded by Honourable Corbassa. Clause 38, proposed by Honourable James, seconded by Honourable Waili. Clause 39, proposed by 38. Well, you see, when that people's brains are working, yes. Clause 38, proposed by Honourable Corbassa, seconded by Honourable Debbie. Clause 39, Honourable, proposed by Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Waili. Clause 40, proposed by Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Hadebi. Clause 41, proposed by Honourable Corbassa, seconded James, proposed by, seconded by Honourable Corbassa. Clause 42, proposed by Honourable Hadebi, seconded by Honourable Hill Lewis.
Right, thank you, members. Now, as we come to the end of that process, the report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade Industry on the Special Economic Zones Bill, B3 2013, dated 31st July 2013. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the subject of the broad... these cut and paste. No, I'm worrying if it's the right number. Because here it says 3 feet. Yeah, but there it says 2. Oh, well, I don't know why. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the subject of the Special Economic Zones Bill, B3 2013, referred to it and classified by the Joint Tagging Mechanism, JTM, as Section 76 Bill, reports the bill with amendments. 3A, these are the amendments, you see, 2013. The report to be considered. Can we have somebody to move the report? Honourable James, seconded by the Honourable Debbie. Members, that was what I call a very collegiate process we have just undertaken. And I thank all members because this was one of the more complex bills that we had before we rose the constituency, and which we were able to look at the technicalities that were being raised now and also the principle of harmonisation within our legislation. So I thank all of you on that particular count. I also want to thank the Honourable Joyce Ngeli from the project, from probably a cup of tea, and coming to join. Okay. So we do appreciate it, Mum. Thank you very much, Honourable Ngeli. Yes. Honourable Hadebi?
Chairperson, on the previous meeting when we were dealing with this bit, there were mistakes in the answer duration of that. I don't know whether they were corrected, those mistakes. What happened? Because really, those things reflected that the Freedom Charter is updated. I don't know what happened. Was that answered record corrected?
The Hansard report is done by our outside institution when we do the transcription. We do check and verify and it has been corrected. So we will submit the corrected transcript to members so that they reflect the corrected wording.
Now, but if it was Hansard, it should have been verbatim. And I am somewhat surprised at such an error. But I don't, without looking at the situation, Honourable Hadebi, it's difficult for me to comment.
No, Chairperson, sometimes it can be the issue of inaudibility. Yeah, if you can sort, sometimes it is might be inaudible. You can hear it properly.
Well, I mean, everyone knows the Freedom Charter.
So, but then, Chairperson, I think that you can also make a good option here. So what the effect of it is.
So, I was in fact going to propose that we rename Mr. Halebi as Mr. Entity.
Technical issues, we really do have to move without turning into anything else than what it is. But thank you very much, and that did go far more expeditiously than I expected. And we must thank yourself, Advocate Van der Merwe, of course DTI, for also undertaking to do what it said it would, its consultation once again with the Treasury, and of course Advocate Stridham as well. So we do thank you. As I said to you yesterday, let us take the opportunity to also look into our minutes and keep up to date. We've only got three sets. I don't know that we'll do all three now, but I'm looking at yourself, Mr. Herman. No, I don't know whether we've got them.
Oh, yes.
Or are they still on your seat?
The chairperson, when you adopt a minister, you send a quorum. I've got the problem.
Oh,
yeah.
But can we at the very least peruse them? Because you know what happens, and if I may just remind members, they don't look at them again. And that may be why we have certain challenges. So I don't want to go down that street. So can we just look at them and leave the adoption till the quorum? Am I right? We don't have quorum. The quorum has just walked, you know, left to go to a her committee meeting. Unless the DA can bring in a quorum. You know, with all extra personal 2 years.
I'm sure I can arrest you some of that.
Why not? Why not? And, you know, just all of us want to leave as much time for other work. Let's put it that way, for other work. So if we're able to compress much into one meeting, it releases us from Friday. So 2 minutes and it'll allow me to just speak to Mr. Hermans about a couple of matters. You know, just perhaps to share with you, we've had quite a challenge with Mr. Hermans not having a cell over 3 months now. I think it's 3 months or longer. A cellular. And we may not realize how challenging this can be, but it can become extremely challenging with communication. And these are things that we do need. By the way, I have followed it up in numerous letters through the right channels at the highest level. And it's gone into an admin management meeting, you know, and a decision was taken, which, of course, is in the process of being implemented, I believe. I hope it's not when I'm gone. But there we are. So we are pursuing that. Can you cast any light on the subject, or are you very happy I can't get hold of you? You know, the committee secretary, Mr. Hermans, has reminded me that GTI need not be part of the processes of administration here in Parliament. And but thank you very much for coming and completing your process of the special economic zones. And we do appreciate your application to the legislation and your cooperation with the Portfolio Committee. So thank you very much.
respect you and your team. So you well, you see, one was put right off track when I started reading that last statement, and had to stop myself as I got to the word B. But anyway, thank you very much, DG Chapupa, you and your full team. Of course, the advocate, Johan van Stradam, I mean, you may wish, if you leave, if you so wish, you can stay for tea, whatever it is. Yourself, advocate, Bessa Mervo, you know, you're not really required right now, as you know, but it's up to you. But we also have, advocate Nguke, the state law advisor, I didn't quite see you to begin with, and which is why I didn't. Oh, there you are. Right on my blind side, but I honestly didn't see you right at the beginning. Yes. So if you were here, then because the late acknowledgement. Thank you very much. Of course, we always have Ms. Naidu with us. Right. Okay, members, we have acknowledged everyone and we've released a few on early parole. But we've paroled them. All right. Members, while we are waiting, and I see it's quarter past ten, perhaps what we could do is immediately from Ms. Hurling go into the status report on matters relating to the... For anyone who thinks they'd won a bit there, please close that door, please. Please close that door. I mentioned horse racing and there's a general movement. I'm about to take a punt. Right, onward. And the reason why I suggested to Manco we do this, this has been an ongoing challenge in the committee. Every year it's come up, and every year we've had ironclad commitments. And every year the ironclad commitments have rusted away. So we cannot continue like this. I must be quite honest, and I appreciate it, that this was never a parochial matter, party parochial. It was people were unanimous, all parties, in saying this must be cleaned up. And it was at least we not having a party political dispute about such matters. So what we would like to do is to allow Ms. Hurling, because they will be coming up, to refresh our memories on some of the challenges that have arisen. Then members can also just add to it or do clarification. And if there's anything that Mr. Hermans has to ensure we have for the final meeting on that, which will be next month, I think, is it? The 3rd of September, then you are able to go to Mr. Hermans with that and we can add that in as well. All right, over to you, Ms. Hurling.
Good morning, members. I'm going to just provide a background on the situation between the South African Groomers Association and the National Horse Racing Authority. The situation came to the People's Valley Committee's attention during the 2011-12 process on considering the Gambling Review Commission's report. As part of this process, we had public hearings, including the horse racing industry stakeholders. And one of the stakeholders that appeared quite late in the process was the South African Groomers Association. During the presentation, they provided some of the key challenges that they were facing within the industry. This included lack of transformation, alleged abuse by trainers, which are the employers. Currently, they're employed on an apprenticeship basis. So they should be training to become trainers as well. Then other labor-related matters such as UIF, currently there's some issues with payslips, and then development and training of grooms, which they feel is largely neglected. And then they also were desiring a recognition agreement between themselves and the National Horse Racing Authority. So the main focus that we've been looking at was this establishment of the recognition agreement. So Manco took it upon itself to have meetings with the Groomers Association to fully understand what the concerns were and to facilitate how to actually address these. So there were about 3 or 4 meetings in this regard. They also requested that the National Gambling Board facilitate meetings between the NHA and the Groomers Association so that we could actually have a recognition agreement established. However, the National Gambling Board presented a report to us on the 15th of May 2013 stating that there's now a deadlock regarding this recognition agreement. Some of the reasons are the NHA is saying that they don't have recognition agreements with anyone. Although they regulate a number of players in the industry, the current law includes licensing and registering all participants in the sport, which includes breeders, owners, trainers, jockeys, and officials. And they stated in the previous presentation that they gave to the committee that they have contractual relationships with each of the participants, which are then bound to the rules and constitution of the NHA. So many of the issues that the NHA sees is actually labor-related, and as such, they do not want to mediate between the trainers and the groomers. And they've subsequently suggested drafting a code of conduct between trainers and groomers, which should form part of the trainers' licensing conditions. However, the Groomers Association still wants a recognition agreement, which covers skills development, registration, licensing of grooms by the NHA, and the communication mechanisms with the NHA operators and trainers, among other issues. Subsequently, on the 7th of May, there was a stakeholder workshop, which between the groomers and all the other stakeholders, the outcomes were that the stakeholders are in disagreement that they should be signing a recognition agreement with the groomers because they don't recognize the Groomers Association as a legitimate association. However, they agreed to engage on areas of development in general, including groomers, but also wider. The Groomers the Gambling Board had recommended that they continue providing non-financial support to grooms to help them actually legitimize themselves. Also that the DTI and Department of Labor considers providing financial support to fully establish the Grooms Association, and that the Minister and the Portfolio Committee consider a regulatory framework that would facilitate socioeconomic development for grooms within the racing fraternity. During our Gambling Review Commission report, one of our recommendations was also that the NDB and the DTI considered re-looking at the whole industry as a whole and then doing a proper review because currently the legislation doesn't cover horse racing. It refers to it, but there's no actual laws governing how the NHA and anything else fits into gambling and the sport. And then the way forward is, as Audrey mentioned, we will be having a meeting on the 3rd of September, including the Minister of Trade and Industry, the Groomers Association, the National Horse Racing Authority, the National Gambling Board, Jockey Association, and the Breeders Association. And in that meeting, we're trying to actually move the sport process forward and break the deadlock, hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Herling. I think issues that would immediately come to mind would be, well, why do they lack legitimacy by the people, sales, you know, etc. And for us to get that clear, what are we talking about when these different stakeholders say they lack legitimacy? You know, be clear in our minds from the different angles, etc. The other thing, of course, as well, is that it may be of value to the committee and to take the matter forward if we alerted our fellow portfolio committees, for example, the Labour, what, and so on. You know, we don't want to have seen something brewing and then allow it to grow. And then they say, well, why didn't you alert us at that particular point?
I can think of who else we should have invited in terms of Parliament per se to be here on one hand. And then beyond that, the Minister has agreed to be here himself because matter is a very serious matter. There are three things involved here. The one is this is one of the few areas or sectors that has not undergone any form of transformation. If I may put that in its broadest term, it has been described as still racialized in many ways. Now that's not from me as the chair saying that. That came from stakeholders, not necessarily the workers or groups. But when we were holding these hearings, indeed there is some validity in the position or argument that, you know, the grooms are X and Y are this and this is that, and you can't get in and these clubs all hold sway. The club issue, you see, where membership would be controlled. So these are not things that simply the ASC members brought up. They were brought up in general by stakeholders and members of the committee. The third thing that has come up repeatedly is that the grooms seem to be, if you like, the domestic workers of the area. You know, there's just nothing governing what they do, how long they work, etc., etc. So that does appear to be quite a serious challenge. The third thing we must keep in mind, the horse racing industry is not simply a sport. It's not simply a sport. It is a great value in it in terms of labour creation, you know, job creation, employment, and the stud value. There's a great economic value in that industry. So it's an industry as well as a sport. It's not simply a sport, a gambling venture. Now, those are the reasons why we thought we should bring it back. And having said that, I should just indicate that Mr. Arnold James has managed to secure someone. So we could go ahead with the minute. He's just indicated outside the door. So I don't know if our assistant is around here who could check. So any other comments while we're waiting for the Honourable James to come in with the member? Yes, Honourable Hill-Lewis?
Chair, in the context of this situation, I think there's a really important success story that we need to note because it's, I believe, a model for the future. In this year's Durban July, there was a horse that was scheduled to run called Vercingetorix. At the last moment, it was withdrawn because it actually received a bet offer to go and race in Dubai.
Yes.
That horse is completely owned by a cooperative of groomers.
Yes.
And they sold that horse to a champion trainer called Mike the Cock, who's a very famous racing trainer. They sold it for 1.4 million rand. Making themselves, I think they bought it for 100,000 rand, so they made themselves a 1.3 million rand profit on that horse, and it's completely owned by a cooperative of groomers. So there's a real success story for the groomers in that horse, and I'm not sure that we're allowed to have NCOP. Can we have an NCOP member? Really, we've got to have your name. Sorry, man.
May I thank you for making yourself available?
Sorry, Lily. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for alerting us,
it's a real success story for the groomers, and I think you know, it's something that I don't think has received enough of attention in South Africa.
It is a great success, and that's the kind of thing I was saying, you know, the stuff, the economic industry value is very, very clear. On the sporting side, as we know, I think it was the first African or black jockey that won the July, yes. So I thought perhaps you would be coming up with winning, you know, the actual jockey, but I think from an economic point of view, you raised the right issue. Thank you, Honourable Hill-Lewis. I was not aware of the co-op issue. Thank you.
Okay.
And I
see you're quite a follower of the horse industry, like one of your other colleagues who was here. No. It's a very good industry. You know, there's a lot of health issues involved in. Mm. Honourable
Chairperson, I think that we have to appreciate all the stakeholders who are involved in trying to break the deadlock. I think that as the Portal Committee, we have to acknowledge their effort in trying to resolve this issue. But as the deadlock has persisted, I think that the route of having all the stakeholders in one room, plus the minister, is very critical. But we must have a session. Because, as we said previously, that when you consider the issue of the breeders, the horses which are sold abroad, there's a lot of revenue accrued by the state itself, through sales, whatever it might be. But I think that this issue of having the groomers as the Cinderella of the industry is not correct. So what we must do, what they have requested during the public hearing. The National Horse Racing Authority requested to be regulated. They requested to be regulated. So I think that when we have that meeting of the stakeholders, I think that that report must be pulled out. That report must be pulled out because they made that request themselves. So that really we must ensure that this whole chain of this industry is enjoyed by all the people. So the groomers are part of that. I think that this success story which Honorable Hill Lewis is speaking about must really be presented even during that time to show that the intention is that you can have someone who's a groomer, but some other type must be a breeder or a horse trainer. I think that the type of opportunities which must make available for our people. So I just said the sooner we meet with all stakeholders, the better for the industry. Thank you.
Honourable Kadebe, yes, I know the groomers, one aspect there, do feel after two meetings that we may be dragging our feet. There is this. But in fact, we've met with a number of the stakeholders, as you know, as Manco, and they simply reiterate the need for this meeting we have now put together. We had always hoped that we would have a broader gambling piece of legislation by now. Over the years. That is not going to happen. We know that now. And we know that what we'll be left with is the NLB, you see, which we're taking forward, which is an entirely different piece of legislation. But it will be one of these areas which we would have to say in terms of our SAC plan, this had been targeted, etc., and this is what has been achieved. But the legislation was not drafted and crafted per se, and perhaps it was due to, well, we don't know what it was due to, so let me not put a comment on there. We haven't had it, but it is becoming more urgent daily because of the issues that are being raised in this regard, especially when organizations come to you and say, please regulate us, and they do this for 2 years. Please regulate us. And we say, yes. The yes is a yes, and that's it. And so in many ways, it's an area we certainly didn't succeed in, let me put it that way, but perhaps this meeting may take us further. So it's a vital meeting. I'd like us to think of any other institution, committee, or stakeholder you believe should be at this meeting. I've already said Labour, but I don't know who else. Yes, Honourable Kadebe.
So, the issue of horse racing overlaps with sport. So we must get those guys from the side of sport.
Your comrade, your leader. All right, okay. So we had just reached a point when...
And I think you'll smile, Honourable Harris, you'll smile, because you were with us for so long. We have just finished the status report on horse racing. And you must be thinking, what? DJ, what is going on? We are taking it forward in a major meeting, and let me leave it there. But we would appreciate it if Honourable Kobase is here. He's, I'm sure, just you know, one of these places that only the men are able to go into. But what we and of course we're short on men here. I'm just looking at only my right here. Right, let's go through them and then we'll just pass. Right, as soon as he walks in, we'll get the assistant to just keep on alerting him so he puts on a bit of speed when he walks down the passage. Right. Okay. First one is at the 14th of June. All right, thank you. Right. Members, the minutes of proceedings of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, Friday, 14th June. Page 1. Please check the spelling of your names and your attendance. And this, of course, was the bill at that time. 1, 2, 3, page 2, 1, 2, 3. Clause 1, page 3, 2, 4, and 5 clauses, page 4, page 5, 9, 10, 11, 12, page 6, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, new clause, a solution of the advisory board, page 6, page 7, a new clause, and the implementation protocol, 22, clause 22 again, 23, 24, page 9, clause 25, page 10, 26, 27, 28, and we're moving across to page 11, clause 29, clause 30, page 12, clause 31, 32, 33, 34, page 13, 35, 36, 37. Clause 14, 38, 39, 40. Resolution, closure. Page 15, closure. 19th of June would be the next meeting, and there's the schedule on the back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There seem to have only been 6 signatures here at that meeting, is that right? And yet there were 7 people present. Do you see that? My misunderstanding was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 signatures. Do we see that there?
Yeah.
So, it doesn't quite make sense because you haven't got Albert as an apology on here on the front page, page 1, and yet you've written that here. He may have come late. So I want this corrected, please. That one. He was present. Okay, someone to propose adoption of Friday the 14th of June and Honourable Kobase, seconded by a full-time member of the committee, seconded by Honourable James. Right. With that mini amendment on that register. And then you have that meeting there, which is, of course, all the Hansards there. Is that correct? There's not another set of minutes. Where's the other set? There we are. 19th. Wednesday, 19th of June. We have a lot more people present. Right. And then we move to page 2. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Page 2. Then we have the attendance register on the 19th of June. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Wednesday, the 19th of June. Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Khademi. Right. That was the 19th of June. Secretary informed me, Mr. Herman, that the transcript will be arriving tomorrow or next week. Tuesday, the 23rd of July, and quite a few people present, no, not that many people present, the ANC and DA holding the fort. Page 1. Page 2, 1, 2, 3. We have someone to propose adoption of the minutes of Tuesday, the 23rd of July, 2013, and proposed by a person present at that meeting. Honourable Khabaza, seconded by Honourable James. Right. Now, those are the three sets of minutes. We do have this particular one here, the report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, which I referred to you yesterday. Do you remember? On the joint attendance with the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology and on Rural Development and Land Reform, one of the attendants of the 4th International Meeting for Parliamentarians as part of the 63rd International Astronautical Congress held in Naples, Italy. The 30th of September, that date is correct, 2012. I explained yesterday we've been unable to get always get the science and technology person on board, he's been ill. We went through this yesterday. I did refer to a number of issues here. And so at the outset, I'm going to ask you if you have a challenge or whether we can go page by page, just page by page. Is there something you would like to amend and add in the light of what was said yesterday? You recall, we went through this, and we're not talking about a policy issue, but I think it was more an issue. It's just that I said I had hoped that we would have had the Honourable Albert here, who'd been here before. You know, the Honourable Khabaza, you have been there once before, haven't you? And the only other person who's attended has been from the IFP. Right. The DA has not yet attended this, Honourable James, you know, for what, in fact, it was their choice, the previous, not this last time, but the previous occasion when the IFP had gone. So I merely say that because I think at that time you had gone on something else and members were changing their positions. All right, page 1. Page 2. In particular, I had mentioned the International Space University, which I think is a very valuable thing. Page 3. Page 4. And basically it ends with concluding remarks. At that point, it's simply a report of an oversight, a meeting, a summit attendance. Mr. Hermans, is this in line with all the rules? Right. We have someone to propose the adoption for this to be ATC, please. Thank you, Honourable Khabaza, seconded by now, if you have a challenge, it's fine, you know, obviously, it's a very voluntary process, but yes. Thank you, Honourable James. Thank you.
My only problem is that there's wonderful phrase here, space is ubiquitous.
Yes. Well, isn't that correct, or is that correct? Yes. It was something I remember when I learned Latin. Because the professor who gave us Latin loved the word, so, you know, it's sort of
we pass this report, it can go on to the ATC. However, I think that we need a resolution of a committee now. Do you remember the resolution which I proposed, which I think, Honourable James, you even used the word compelling. We need to make a compelling case or something. Remember the issue in question yesterday?
Yes.
That the importance of the committee being able to send a couple of people, as has always been the case. Secondly, that it should be accompanied by a support member of staff and not doing this alone. So I think the main resolution was to factor in the issue of the importance and value of this to, you know, to our productive economy and the policy that we're trying to implement. Honourable Mr. Holmes. So that will go in a letter to Mr. Frohley, to the Honourable Frohley, the Chair of Chairs. At the same time, in principle, I indicated that the DA, if they were available, would attend. I said if, that depends on their party and the AFC. And perhaps two people could go with a member of the Secretariat. Yeah, that was the proposal, Honourable James.
Just to say, in terms of our processes, that there will be a meeting tomorrow afternoon to consider both the Bali and the school. Okay.
Thank you very, very much. All right. Members, those not to delay anything, you can see, Honourable Harris, these days it's taken 4 years, but we finally are at a point where we go a lot faster than we used to. However, we do have something here called the update, and I'm looking at my timing, it's 10:45, on quarterly financial and non-financial reports of the DTI in relation to the budget process. I'm looking at Ms. Malalani, the funder, to just give us, obviously there a number of documents that are not available to her as we even talk, but I think it would be constructive for us to get a preview of where we're going with this, and for the word Vera not to be so foreign to us that we think it refers to the cold here in Cape Town. So, and I think, yes. Honourable Harris, we do appreciate you being able to step in. Thank you. Thank you.
I spent considerable capital getting here.
No, thank you, Honourable James. We do appreciate it. Okay. So we're not doing, it's not a report, it's a briefing of 5 minutes. So it's just a briefing to alert us to some of the challenges that we will be facing, if you think, when we have to conclude this, which is the middle of October. Am I right? I think it's best we know now, so we can take certain decisions. So over to yourself then, Ms. Malalani. That's a lovely beginning, Ata, but do this again.
I used to think that was in relationship to some cellular service as well now these days. They say, oh, this is me.
I didn't know if you were trying to advertise that, but
morning, Honourable Members. I'm presenting a status report on our BRI process. As you know, it's that time of the year, and we need to work on that report. The report, the BRI report, is meant for that members get a say in the budget process. The ultimate aim of the report is that the, in a certain point of time where we have got enough evidence from the financial and the non-financial performance of the DTI, we understand their processes and we understand the way they do business, that the members can have a say in the budget. Should we increase the size of the budget, should we decrease? That's when we have to amend the budget. The report gives an overview and an analysis of the financials and the non-financials for the Department of Trade and Industry for a period of 8 months, which is the last financial year, 2012-2013, and the first 6 months of this year, 18 months. what the report does is take the mandate of the DTI and check the financial and the non-financial performance, if those are in line with the mandate of the DTI, and if those get to the desired outcome, which is job creation and economic growth. The next slide is just showing what the content of the BRI report would be like. That would be the annual report and the two courses that we'll receive this year. The annual report will receive at the end of August. The first quarter report, as you would recall, that the DG made a presentation on the first quarter of this current financial year. However, we have not received the full report for the first quarter of the financial year. The department has promised that we'll get that by Friday this week. The challenge is going to arise when we have to receive the second quarter report. Mm. In conversation with the department, they've articulated that we can only receive the second quarter report by mid-October. That's going to be a challenge, because by mid-October, that's when we need to finish our report. And that report that we're going to receive from them for the second quarter will only be a draft report. There might be changes to that report. Given that, that means we'll have a 15-month report, which does not require with the legislation, because it requires that we have 18 months. Thank you.
Are there any questions regarding the status report and the briefing we've just received? All right, no questions, but I thought it valuable for the researcher just to brief us there. One of the things which perhaps I just didn't hear you, and you may have mentioned this, you see, the legislation itself, it's just, you know, it's an 18-month process, all right, number one. Number two, it should be coming in, we should be really ending and concluding it in November, you see. This is where part of the challenge comes. And it is something that when this legislation was being, you know, the sort of scrutinized and worked on by the relevant committee, which was then a grouped committee, you know, including the joint budget, among others, it was a cluster committee, the issue did come up, I know, because I sat there, and we repeatedly raised the issue of an election year. You know, which could be as early as March, you know, this is how it was put. I remember the meeting very well, or could be as late as June or something, you know. But the challenge would be, you know, if it were March or April, for example, you're really running into serious time constraints in this process. And the decision then, or the position that was adopted, was informed by the fact that all of the, you see, Honourable Singh, this is for the people who are not Honourable Members on the list.
Oh, okay.
So, of course, now I was confused whether as part of the broader Christian principles you have spread yourself left as well, but I mean, you should be on the right. You know, I wasn't too sure, umbrella organisations and so on, but yes, that just distracted me for a minute there. But the point I was making was that it was informed by a position which was much earlier taken by Parliament, that all, you know, of the budgets should be aligned, all of the budgets, meaning, you know, the local and the province and national, in principle, that was a principle. The second thing was that actually, notwithstanding that, yes, that would happen in some time in the future, it was imperative that we change the timing of the budget process. And the timing of the
budget process was largely because of when this came in, the new piece of legislation. And again, that is work, you know, you say work in progress. You see, it hasn't been done. So there were all of these things which I think people in the previous term were, had hoped, let me rather use the word hoped, that in this term, that sort of, those issues would get attention, you know, etc., and that some progress would be made in that direction. However, we are still, in terms of the timing, you know, etc., we're still where we were when we passed the legislation. So that's really one of the key constraints facing us. The second challenge that we have slowly overcome is that we were not familiar with the requirements of the BRRR entirely as a portfolio committee and what value and how we should use it. And we've slowly begun to recognize what it is the essence here and what to do. And so we're hoping, having achieved that end, we're able to say, even though we've got challenges that we've heard now, we'll be able to say, what was our objective here? We've been with the committee now for 4.5 years. We know what's been happening. The annual report will be here. And the first quarter, which is solid, will give us the beginnings of a trend, well, not a trend, at least an eye-opener, which way is it pointing. And then the draft second quarter, because it will not be ready. It cannot be ready. You know, it's as simple as that. But the draft is going to give us some trend, which we can relate to the annual report. And I think this time round, what we've got to do, and this is our last, this is the last, you know, year that we're doing it in this term, it's important that we take account of previous years. You know, we look backwards and say that we've moved here, and X remains a challenge, you know, over this period. Or we've moved here and there's been some definitive progress here, you know, etc. So I think we have the opportunity now, 4 years later, to give to get a real understanding of the thrust in which certain allocations, line functions are going, and we also now can honestly say, is this adding value? Is it doing what it should be doing? What we believe are priorities of DTI, is it? And if trade is an issue, we need now to be loud and clear. Do you follow? And why do we say it is? And if we say it is, where's the money coming from? So those are the things we should be looking at now. And I think we need to be quite frank and transparent so that it helps, you know, the next, those coming into trade industry in the next term. I don't know if anyone wants to make a comment before we adjourn. Yes, Honourable Thring, your maiden comment, yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think my comment would be just with regards to the presentation and concern that was expressed, where we should be reviewing the finances over an 18-month period, but we only have, in essence, a 15-month period in terms of documents and finances that are going to be submitted to us. So the question then is, where does this particular committee, in terms of the function that it has, to properly manage, oversee, and review the finances of the different line functions as you mentioned.
No, thank you very much for that input, Honourable Thring. Thank you. Honourable James?
I wanted to raise a separate issue altogether. I also wanted to comment on the BRRR. But it's simply to say, I mean, just I was absent, I'm sorry for most of what was presented, but my concern would be, in fact, for the legacy to be left for the next administration is in some concrete form a recognition of the fact that what ought to happen, in our view, is much more aggressive trade globally, and that we need to make sure that the department is geared to do that. And we've heard that the ministry is, in fact,
short on trade experts, not compared to Swaziland, which is the wrong comparison to make, but in relation to our competitors globally, India. Just look at India's trade experts and how many of them have PhDs in economics. And if you go to trade desks, you can see that they are on top of their game because they've invested in it. And we should do the same. So and that has to be expressed in budgetary terms. So that was my comment.
No, thank you very much. Do you want to comment anyone else before I just address Honourable Sring on that issue? Honourable Sring, look, as we say, 15 months, it went before 18 in terms of actual documentation, although one can see the trend. I don't think it prevents us, though, at this point, having been with us 4 years, you know, to getting an understanding. In terms of technicalities, it always would have been helpful to know this is the final one and not the draft. Do you follow? But I don't, Gene, I really don't see the department attempting to mislead us by giving us a wrong figure intentionally. You know, that kind of thing. I don't see that. That's not our experience. But it does indicate that we ought to maybe comment that it would have been helpful if we had been able to get through the 18 months, but that there was, as we accept, there was this challenge that we faced. I think that has to be a clear acknowledgement in that direction. But having said that, the point is made, Honourable Jane, and I think it applies, yes, to trade, but may apply to something else as well, and we need to look at that. So let me thank you, Ms. Madalani, for addressing those issues. And as discussed in my office, I think you'll know where to move in that direction. All right. But thank you very, very much. Thank you. Now, Honourable James, on the second issue.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to say that, I mean, you will recall that the traditional knowledge bill, the TK,
yes,
that was introduced to Parliament. It was published in the Government Gazette. We've got to the process of receiving submissions. It has been presented to the House of Traditional Leaders in Durban. And the question I'd like to put formally to you is, first of all, what is the status of that private member's bill? It is for the committee, with you, right? I just need to confirm where it is and what your intention is in terms of introducing it.
Give me just a couple of seconds or a minute. Refreshing my memory with Mr. Hermans on that particular one. My own recollection, but of course here we do have the author, you know, the originator, the proposer of that particular piece of legislation, if I'm not mistaken, Honourable James, was yourself, I mean, but please correct me if I'm wrong. And if I record, it was the May, right, the end of May or so, but I may be wrong there. Now, the question that I raised then, quite right, it came here, and Mr. Hermans is saying no, the issue was in a sense taken up, and we said let's see, first of all check our program. I'm just being impractical, but I'm also saying I did raise a question, and it's unfortunate that the advocate is not here, Advocate van der Merwe, and the question was a clarification in terms of process, and the question I raised in that regard was, here's a bill that has been passed. It's not adopted yet in Parliament. It's adopted in the National Assembly, okay? And it's gone to the National Council of Provinces. That was the case then, you see? It hasn't gone completed its process. Now, what
is the situation when you have got another bill of the same, you know, nature, can I put it that way, that comes in and the other one's sitting in the second house. Now, I was just asking Mr. Hermans if he got that clarification from our table and our advocate, Van der Merwe, in this regard. So, before I give you, you know, a definitive answer on that, Honourable James, I can do so tomorrow, but I do want to get that because that was a question I raised then, and it's not a response I have yet received. I don't know if you would allow some that breath.
Yes, no, I would. Thank you very much. But just to, I just wanted to confirm where it is exactly. So he's with you. Okay. And if you could take, get some clarification, provide some clarification tomorrow, that's fine.
Thank you very much, Honourable James. I do appreciate your understanding there. And then I also task Mr. Hermans, good delegation here, with the, now I really do want a proper consultation done with table and the advocate so we can get a clear response here without this way and that way or misleading anyone. Thank you very much. So that, to some extent, remains unresolved until tomorrow. Then when we look at tomorrow, members, we see it's Thursday, it is our workshop. You know, some of us may have forgotten, and we may just have forgotten, that trade is the second, you know, it's the back-to-back of our mandate. It's trade and industry. And if, you know, when they start looking at how much time did you spend on X, what did you do there, what did you do here, we'd be found wanting. And we said this every year because of legislation that comes in. We will do this workshop, and I think you've arrived at a suitable time, Honourable Thring, joining us now, because now you can get into the workshop and get fully briefed. But I also think we have to ask ourselves about the bits, and that needs to come in at some point. We can't leave that hanging somewhere. It is important to get a clear position on the bits now, which we are familiar with, but we do need to just get that clarified. Then it says here that that is 9 o'clock to 1600, huh? I hope no one has arranged a political meeting at 2 o'clock. Well, you don't, but anyway, carry on. No, you, of course you have lunch, but Honourable James.
I have difficulties after 2. I do. So, the workshop is scheduled to end at what time?
Four.
At 4.
Alright, just to see, I think Mr. Hermans is looking at the speed with which we're conducting business this session, and he says, well, it could be earlier than 4. He's now mentioning 3 and so on to me. Look, whatever it is, you would still have a problem, probably.
I could be excused about 1:45. I'm sorry, my colleague Jordan will remain until the end.
Honourable right, Honourable Thring.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The reason I asked is that I do have a lunch meeting. So if I could have an idea, if there is going to be a lunch break, then I could suitably arrange just to slip out and come back in again.
We never have external, as it were, lunches. We have what is called working lunches. So I don't want to mislead any new member. You know, something like bringing something in a suitcase or something like that, yeah, and then inviting your guest to join you. But no, we will have food there, all right. But I'm just looking, members, it's going to be here, my old assembly chamber. You know, you need to liaise with Mr. Hermans on that, because he exercises the lunch break. Thank you. I don't think there's anything else other than we will be finishing earlier than expected. I think that's good news for all of us. But I would like us, when we have this workshop, to raise the issue
if we wish to, of bits here and there with whoever is giving us any information in that regard. But I want to thank you most sincerely, honourable members, for being here this morning, for us to get through the minutes, get through all the extra work. I would say we're right up to date. And we'll see you tomorrow in the old assembly chamber. Let us put it this way, if we get there at 10 to 9, it's not sharp at 9. So let's do that. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.